Morning. Today's daf in Shabbos is daf lamed vav. 36. Two times chai. We are on lamed hey. Today, God willing, we're going to finish the second parak of Shabbos. And then, with more of God's help, we're going to start the third parak of Shabbos. Let's continue from where we left off yesterday. Yesterday we are culminating a discussion that we had yesterday that we had the day before, and that is a discussion of Bein HaShmashos. The Bein HaShmashos period is a difficult sugya in the Gemara, as we're trying to make sense out of confusion. We don't know what it is. Is it day? Is it night? Is it something of a hybrid? So, and when exactly is it? So the Braisa brought down three opinions: Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Nechemiah, and Rabbi Yossi. And the Gemara's conclusion is that the halacha regarding Shabbos follows like Rabbi Yehuda. So the Bein HaShmashos period begins at Shkiyas Hachama. We had a discussion yesterday. Which Shkiyas Hachama are we talking about? Are we talking about the visible Shkiyas Hachama or the not so visible Shkiyas Hachama? the Rabbi Natam Shkiyas Hachama. Either way, that's the halacha. And then for Kohanim, the Gemara said yesterday, the Gemara imposed a special chumar for the Kohanim, which is that even after the period of the Bein HaShmashos Rabbi Yehuda, which is 13 and a half minutes, according to one opinion, is 13 and a half minutes after Shkiyas Hachama, Kohanim have to wait an additional amount before they get to eat their truma. They have to wait till the Shkiyas Hachama of Rav Yossi. They have to wait for the Bein HaShmashos of Rav Yossi to conclude, which is sometime after the Bein HaShmashos of Rabbi Yehuda. Hopefully I didn't lose you already, but that was a summary of what we've been saying up until now. I'm Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. We are now on Lamed Hamid Beis. We're three lines down. We're starting the beginning of the line. Gemara quotes the name of Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Koch Avecha Yom, Shnayim Bein HaShmashos Shosh Laila. Okay, it's very simple. We'll look up at night. You see one star, so that's still daytime. You see two stars, that's Bein HaShmashos. And you see three stars, and that's nighttime. So again, it's clear that we're making different observable phenomena in terms of trying to identify what's day, what's Bein HaShmashos, and what's night. So here we're given another sequence of events, which is that it's 1, 2, and 3. 1 is still day, 2 now is right yellow light, that's Bein HaShmashos, and then 3 stars means it is night. The Gemara quotes the Brisa supporting this as well. Kochav echad yom shnayim Bein HaShmashos shlosha laila. I'm Rav Yosef lo kochav gedolim anirim b'yom v'lo kochav katanim she'anirim ela b'layla ela beinonim. So now, in terms of the stars can be also differentiated. You have stars that you can see during the day, right? Planets are very visible during the day. The moon, obviously, which I'm not really sure qualifies as a star, but that could be seen during the day. But in other words, there are stars that could be seen during the day. So when we're talking about the assessment and the visibility of stars, we are not talking about stars that can be seen during the day that have no halachic significance, nor are we talking about stars that can only be seen at night, but we're talking about Beinonim, these medium-sized stars, which, again, it's difficult, as I mentioned yesterday, to figure out what Beinonim are. In fact, some Rishonim are of the opinion that that's some of the machlok is going on in the Gemara, meaning the various opinions amongst the Amoraim are a disagreement in terms of what medium-sized stars are. So, but nevertheless, Beinonim is the medium-sized stars that we're looking for. I'm Rav Yossi Bar Zvira, Osa Malacha B'Shnei Bein HaShmashos Chayv Chatas. Now, Rav Yossi Bar Zvira says the following. Let's say you do a Malacha Bein HaShmashos, two Bein HaShmashos, meaning, let's say you do a Malacha Bishol, let's talk about cooking, because that's coming up in the upcoming parak. So let's say you cook Bein HaShmashos on Friday afternoon, and you cook Bein HaShmashos on Motzei Shabbos. Okay? Now, what do we say about Bein HaShmashos? We don't know. We don't know what it is. Either it's day, either it's night, or it's both. But in other words, we don't know. So on the one hand, if I just did it during one Bein HaShmashos, so obviously that's a big no-no. You're not allowed to do malachas during Bein HaShmashos, as we've been discussing the past couple of days. But if I were to do a malacha during Bein HaShmashos, I wouldn't be bringing a carbon chatos, because I don't know if I violated a malacha. Maybe I did, maybe I didn't. It's a suffix. So you don't bring a carbon over a suffix. Remember, bringing a carbon is only if I know that I violated a malacha. Not willingly, obviously, we're talking about Bishogeg, but that's only if I know I violated malacha. Here, I don't even know. But if I did a Bein HaShmashos Friday and Bein HaShmashos Motzei Shabbos, so the Gemara's expression is Mima Nafshach, meaning one way or another, at one of them, you definitely violate the malacha. Look, if Bein HaShmashos is day, so then that means that Friday afternoon, you're fine. But that also means Motzei Shabbos, you cooked on Shabbos. If Bein HaShmashos is night, so we'll say the opposite. Motzei Shabbos, you're fine, but then Friday night, Friday evening, you cooked on Shabbos. And if it's both...
But that's a classic double suffix.
Right. Okay, if it's... Right. Maybe if it's both, it's two halves. Okay, that's already now I'm making light. But in other words, okay. But the either way, you're going to be chayv karmen chatos miman nafshach. So Amalei Rav Lashame. So Rav says to his attendant, look, let me give you some good advice. Also, in the lokimlu b'shiura derabanan ad shimsha areish dikla at lushraga. Look, you don't know how to tell time. Right, you're not right. You don't wear a watch. And then again, neither does Rava. But you don't. In other words, you're just not accurate. You're not an accurate time teller. You really don't know. On Friday afternoon, now you want to try to coordinate right before the sun sets. Don't do that. What I'm suggesting you do, he says to his attendant, is light neros while the sun is still hovering on the top of the trees. So make sure, give yourself some insurance to know that you are lighting before Shabbos.
But we cannot light before Plagei Mincha.
Correct, meaning there is such a thing as too early to light. Correct, that's right. The Gemara doesn't discuss it, but yes. So b'yamam unan mai. Now, what if it's a cloudy day? So it's a cloudy day, and you're a poor time teller, and this goes to back to a time when there were no such thing as watches or clocks. So now what do? So b'masa chazi tanagola. So if you're living in the city, so rely on the rooster. The rooster has the knowledge to determine. Anosin l'sechvi binala achin bein yom uvein laila. He's able to know the difference between night and day, and I guess presumably also day and night. So go rely on the rooster, he'll tell you. And bedabra orve inami ada'ane. And now what if you don't live in the city, you live out in the suburbs, or whatever, however you want to translate dabra. So either look towards the ravens. I'm not really sure how they communicate to you, that it is, maybe they also squawk right before night. Who knows? Or ada'ane. Ada'ane is interesting. Rashi explains ada'ane is a type of grass. Right, and Rashi writes that as the sun moves, they move together with the sun. And so, right, sunflowers basically. And so in the morning they're facing east, in the evening they're facing west. And just look at the incline of these blades of grass, and you'll know exactly where the sun is. Even if it's a cloudy day, these grass can tell you where the sun is. Rather ingenious. Tan Rabbanan. Sheish Tzkiyos Token Erev Shabbos. There is going to be 6 shofar blasts that we blow on Erev Shabbos. Anyone spent Shabbos in Yerushalayim? So you know the siren goes off in Yerushalayim 40 minutes before Shkia. Communities up north, Muncie, Brooklyn, they also have some sort of siren that goes off. Okay, Boca, not yet.
Email.
Yeah, right. So it's the Sheish Tzkiyos Token Erev Shabbos, but here is how they used to do it back in the good old days. With 6 shofar blasts. So now, Rishona. So number one, lahavtil esa'am mimlacha shebesados. So the first shofar blast is telling all the people out in the field, you know, you have a commute. You got to walk all the way from the field back into the city. So since you people have the longest commute, so when the first time you hear the first shofar blast, get going, right? Start walking from out in the field into the town. Shnia, lahavtil ir vechanios. And the second shofar blast now is for the people in the city. They don't have such a long commute to get home. So by the second shofar blast now, shut the doors, close the stores, time to go home. Shlish is lahadlik as an air, divrei Rabbi Nasan. And now the third shofar blast is telling everyone, okay, it's time to light the nair. Rabbi Yehuda Anasi Omer. Now Rabbi Yehuda Anasi disagrees and he says like this. Shlish is lachlos tefillin. The third shofar blast is to tell people to take off their tefillin. And take off their tefillin. Remember, in the good old days, we wore tefillin all day. Nowadays, our minhag is only to wear tefillin at shacharis, and not beyond that point in time, even though the mitzvah is to wear tefillin as much as you can. But the Shabbos is lav zman tefillin. Shabbos is not the appropriate time to wear tefillin. And so therefore, you have to remove your tefillin before Shabbos. So that third shofar blast is to tell everyone to take off their tefillin. B'shoa k'day tzlias dag katan, o k'day lahadvik pas betanur. And to get your last minute preparation in, you want to roast a little fish, you want to bake your last bread, so you may do that even after the third, and then there's going to be a fourth, v'tokea maria v'tokea, and now there's going to be a tkia trua tkia, v'shoves. And at that point now, it's officially Shabbos, and you have to stop and seed from all malacha.
That was 4 and then another 3 or 4 and another 2?
Yeah, so I'm not, you're right. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, I don't know, his accounting I'm not clear about. Rabbi Nasan's very clear. So, but Rabbi Yehuda Nasi's accounting, does he disagree that there are 7 as opposed to 6?
And it's a little bit more because you've got to carry the shofar home.
Right? We'll get to that. The Gemara is going to get to that. I'm Rosh Hashem and Gamliel, man asel lahem lebavlim, shetokim marian v'shoftim, mitoch marian. So what about the Babylonians? Their minhag is that they would do tkiyah, follow them by trua, and the cessation of work would be in the trua. So token marian havelu chamisha. So now that comes out to be only five. Ela shetoken v'chozim v'token umirian v'shoftim mitoch marian. So the Gemara says, okay, so for them this is what they do: tkiyah, trua, and that trua signifies that it's now Shabbos and you stop doing malacha and minhag of asem biyadim. The Gemara says, look, it's a minhag, meaning that's the way, that's their minhag. But it comes out that they have in fact six blasts. Now there is a brisa that Rav Yehuda teaches his son Rav Yitzchak, and the brisa reads like this: Shnia lahadlikas aner. The second shofar blast is when people would start lighting their neiros. That would be instructional so that everyone would have to light. So the Gemara says, who's that? Meaning, we've seen on the third to light. We've seen on the fourth to light. Who says that you light after number two? Come on. Loka Rabbi Nassim, Loka Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. Ela shlishis lahadlikas aner. Come on, Rabbi Nassim. So, I don't have a Tana. So what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to adjust and correct the Braisa. The Braisa says Shnia, but I'm telling you, correct it and amend it to say Shlishis. Tandebe Rav Yishmael, Shesh Tkiyos Token Erev Shabbos. The Gemara here quotes another Braisa, Tandebe Rav Yishmael, which is going to go over the minhag of the Shofar Blast. There were six Tkiyos that they would blow in Erev Shabbos. Hitzchol Tkoa Tkiyah Rishona. Nimnu Ha'om De Mesadda Maladur Malacharo Shom Lassos Kol Malacha Shebesados. So everyone would stop working on the field. No more plowing, no more harvesting. In other words, no more work out in the field, and they would start making their way in. Now, as they're walking back from the field into town, so this is how it should be done. This is like a Ben Adam Chavero issue, in that the people all the way out in the deep parts of the field, so they should start making their way. And the people that are closer, more proximate to the city, should wait until those who are further out greet them, so that they should all walk back together. In other words, for safety and protection, you should walk as a group, and you should coordinate so that everyone walks home as a group. But in the city itself, stores are still open, because this is only the first shofar blast. And now with the blowing of the second shofar, now everything gets shut down. Trisim are the shutters. They are shutters that they put over their windows. So and the stores get locked. And now, but there was still food, was still cooking, meaning now the second shofar blast just signifies everyone who's working in the city, shut your doors, it's time to go home. But still, food was being cooked at this point. Now, the third shofar blast is now blown. Silek ha-mesalek, v'hitman ha-matman, v'hidlik ha-madlik. And so now, those things should be removed from the oven. Food should be removed from the oven. Food should be insulated. Remember, we talked about how insulation of food is permitted before Shabbos, but and also benos mashos, but only b'davish and mosif hevel, only but something that does not add heat. And finally, At this third shofar blast, hadlakas neiros, you light. V'shoa k'dei tzlias dag, katan o k'dei lahadik pas betanur. And still, even after the third shofar blast, if you want to cook one more piece of herring, you got shal shudas you have to think about, you may do so, or one last bread that you're going to bake in the oven. V'tokea maria v'tokea v'shoves, and then tkia trua tkia, and a stopping and a cessation of malacha. I'm Rav Yossi, Chanina Shamati Shim Bala Hadlik Achar, Sheish Tkios Madlik. Now, what if you heard the shofar and you heard the sixth blast? Do you have time to light even after the sixth blast? And he says, yeah, you have a little bit of time after the sixth blast to light. Shari Nasu Chachamim Shilachaz and Knesset Salik Shofar Leveso, because think about it. The guy who's blowing the shofar himself, doesn't he have to also put away the shofar? Meaning that he has to blow with enough time taken into consideration where he shouldn't be holding the shofar anymore. The shofar is muksa. and you don't want to be holding a shofar on Shabbos, meaning, can you imagine the first thing you do on Shabbos is hold muktzah in your hand? So you don't want to do that. So obviously what he's doing is factoring in that he needs to put the shofar away, is he'll blow a little bit before Shabbos to give himself enough time to put the shofar away. So even after the sixth and final blast, there's still going to be a little bit of time. I'm not quantifying because I don't know what the numbers are, but there's still going to be a little bit of time to put the shofar away, and therefore you have a little bit of time to light the neiros.
The Gemara doesn't give any idea what time these things start, what the interval is between them.
Nope.
Nothing. They're just
It's a minhag. So the Gemara is just describing a minhag.
No, but the question is, do they wait 3 minutes before each blast?
Yeah.
10 minutes.
Understood.
No, understood.
We're not given a lot of information. So laholich shofar leveso. Now Amar Leim Kein Asatet Verach Lishurim. Now, if you're saying that this extended time, this little extra time after the final blast is to allow the chazan to put away his shofar, well, the Gemara first starts off by saying, well, it's the amount of time it takes him to take it home. Well, where does he live proximate to the shul? Meaning, not every gabbai lives in the same place proximate to the shul. Excuse me. And so therefore what comes out now is, it could be a minute, could be 2 minutes, could be that he lives on the other side of town, and therefore there actually are 5 or maybe even 10 minutes between the final blast and the shofar. And the Gemara never likes giving a variable. The Gemara always wants to see a constant. So how can you tell me, oh, it's the time that takes him to take it home? Elam makom tanu yesh lo lechazan hakneses berosh gago shesham maniach shofaro lefi she'im etalten lo shofar v'lo asachatzotzros. So the Gemara says, well, there's a little place on the roof of the shul. That's where the shofar was kept. And it's the amount of time that it takes to walk from the first floor up to the second floor. Okay? And that is the Gemara assumes that's a standard time. And that's the kind of cushion that you have between the final blast and the onset of Shabbos. So you do have a moment after the final blast where you could light your neros.
One is young and runs quickly upstairs, and the other is old.
Okay.
A little slow.
Okay. Could be. Now, v'hatanya. Now, this takes us on to a muksa discussion. From here until pretty much the end of the perek, so now we tackle the topic of muksa. Muksa, I don't know if we formally introduced ourselves to muksa. We kind of touched on Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda, but we are now going to engage in muksa talk for the remainder of this, well, not the entire Amud, but for most of the remainder of this Amud. Now, when are we going to talk about muksa in great detail? Third perek, which was coming up later this morning. So we get to speak about muksa. Now, that's the second half of the perek. The first half of the perek of the third perek deals with preparing food for Shabbos. Okay, we're going to get to all this. But muksa is coming up. And right now, we get a nice introduction to the topic of muksa. Now, there are many categories and divisions of muksa. Far too many right now to go over. But right now, let's just give a basic of basics. Any object which is a kli, which is a utensil, is not necessarily muksa. First of all, what is muksa? Muksa simply means that it's not set aside for Shabbos. Okay? An object which has no purpose on Shabbos. So the Chachamim made a gzera that you're not allowed to move it on Shabbos for fear that if you start moving it on Shabbos, the Rambam writes that the issue of muksa is you may end up carrying it. Most of the Rishonim say the issue with muksa is that it's you may end up using it for a malacha. Or it's just simply not within the spirit of Shabbos to start handling things on Shabbos that you really have no right handling. Okay, but in essence, though, it is gzeirah derabbanan, it's a rabbinic decree, not to handle kelim that really have no purpose and not set aside for Shabbos. This eraser would be a perfect example. On Shabbos, this eraser would be muksa. Meaning, I guess you can call it a kli. Okay, I guess debatable. I don't even know what it's made out of. But anyway, but its primary function is to erase the board, which is a malacha on Shabbos. So this eraser is a klisha malachto le'isser. Its primary use is isser. And so therefore, it would be muksa on Shabbos. Okay. But another thing that we should all know, as basics of muksa is concerned, is let's say that this eraser is right on my table. And on Shabbos, I'd like to use this table. So what you do on Shabbos, watch carefully. You pick the eraser up, and you take it off the table. Okay, I know that was complicated. It was a little bit confusing, but that is what's. If you want, I'll do it again. But that's what's called sarach makomo, meaning if I need the place where the muksa is on right now, so I simply pick it up and move it. The had a in yeshiva, I had a such an unbelievable Talmid Chacham. So he would describe to me once that in shul there was a pen on the bima on Shabbos, and everybody, all the boys in the yeshiva, didn't know what to do with the pen's right there. So he walks over, he picks the pen up, and he takes it and he moves the pen to another place. I need the bima right now. Okay, so tzarich mekomo. So in other words, it's that simple. So in other words, if you need the place where it's on right now, so you can move it. Or tzarich gufo. Or let's say, this is not going to be a good paperweight, but let's say I need to hold my paper down. So in other words, I would like to pick this up, tzarich gufo, meaning I need it now for something which I could use on do on Shabbos, use it as a paperweight, terrible paperweight. So the so that's also what you could do. In other words, you could take an object which is moksa, and you can move it if it's tzarich mekom and tzarich gufo. Okay. Again, I'm just going over the basics. Now, the Gemara over here says that the reason why the Chazan HaKnesses is given a little bit of time, he blows a little bit before Shabbos, is because he doesn't want to be holding the shofar on Shabbos itself, because the shofar is moksa. Good. The and the way that we punctuated the whole discussion was ein matalta losa shofar velosa chatzotzos. You can't move a shofar, you can't move a chatzotzos. Now shofar is a shofar, chatzotzos is more like a trumpet. Okay, but both of them are going to be moksa. Vehatanya. Look at the second to last line of the Gemara. We continue shofar mitaltel vechatzotzos ein matalta. A shofar and Shabbos you can move, and chatzotzos you can't move. So in this bright, so now we're making a distinction between shofar and chatzotzos. So obviously there is a stira. In the first bright, so we said that you cannot move shofar and chatzotzos. In the second bright, so it says that you can move a shofar and Shabbos, but not chatzotzos. So Amar Rav Yosef Lo Kasha Kam B'Yachid Kam B'Tzibur. Well, it depends whether it's for an individual or whether it's for a community. Meaning, is it an individual shofar if it's a communal shofar? Now, before we even entertain what the difference is between individual and communal, let's just take a moment to think even about the question of the Gemara. Take a look at the bottom, Tosus on the Amma Tema L'Ri. Tosus says, I don't understand. Look. When we're talking about moving the shofar, right, that's the discussion we're having. Meaning the shofar is not moksa, at least according to the second braisa. What do we mean the shofar is not moksa? It means, presumably, that you can move it either to legufo or lemkomo, like what I described earlier with the eraser. Meaning right now the shofar is on the desk, I need to use the desk, I'd like to use the desk. So I pick the shofar up and I move it. So Tosfos says, if that's the discussion we're having, and that's when we're saying that you're allowed to move the shofar, so then Tosfos is bothered by a very simple question. Well, if you're allowed to move the shofar because of tzarich mekom and tzarich gufo, wouldn't you be allowed to move the chatzotzos as well? What difference would there be between the shofar and the chatzotzos? Jump to the last two lines of Tosfos. V'im tomer kevin de'ari hachi had the metapel shofar hainu tzarich gufo im kein chatzotzos amai ein metatelin. So I don't understand. So what kind of distinction are we making now between shofar and chatzotzos? I can move the shofar, tzarich mekom and tzarich gufo. I can do the same thing for chatzotzos, presumably. So the yeshlamer de chatzotzos muksa yotzer mishofar kamosha afarish basamach. And so now, interesting discussion over here within Tosfos. Well, we're going to grade things about how muksa they are. Meaning, this idea that I could take any item, even though it's a muksa item, my recorder, it's a muksa item, right? Something that I cannot use on Shabbos. But if it's on the table right now, so I'll pick it up and I'll move it. So Tosfos over here says that it has to have some sort of kli label, kli status. The shofar has more of a kli status than that of a chatzotzos. Chatzotzos are trumpets, but they really are, they're not kelim. I know they're musical instruments, so the word we use for them is instruments, but they're not really kelim, right? Yes, curved. Somehow, other than producing sound, it really has no utility whatsoever. But the shofar, as the Gemara is about to tell us, has some sort of utility, which we'll describe in just a moment. And so therefore, what we're doing now is we're basically grading on a curve. Since the shofar is a kli-like item, so therefore it can be moved on Shabbos. Chatzotzos, which is the less of a kli-like item, so even tzarich mekom and tzarich gufo, you cannot move it. That's how Tosfos understands the distinction between shofar and chatzotzos. Now, in the meantime, let's go back to our Gemara and let's try to understand the answer of the Gemara. So again, what our Gemara now is bothered by is that one brice that says you can't move the shofar, and another brice that says you can move the shofar. So now what the Gemara is offering is, well, it depends whether it's an individual shofar or a communal shofar. Gemara says, how does that work? I'm like Abaye. Uviyach l'may chazi. So let's say it's a private shofar. Okay, now what? So, well, the Gemara says, look, if need be, you could use it as a sippy cup for your child. I know it sounds funny, but think about it. It's great. Meaning it's got a wide end, it's got a thin end. So, in other words, now, your child wants to take a drink, and it's hard for him to drink from a big cup, so put the water in the shofar. You ever smell the contents of the shofar? But okay, I know it's hard to imagine. But yeah, but you put the water on one end, and now the child gets to sip from the thin end. It's brilliant. It's really great. So in other words, the shofar does serve as some sort of function, and so therefore it's more kli like, and therefore you can move it on Shabbos if necessary. So the Gemara says, "Betzibonami chazal gamel tinokani." So I don't understand if it's a communal shofar. So what does that change in this discussion? Doesn't change anything. In other words, obviously the communal shofar is used for the community. Well, if I have a communal child who's poor, and the community is taking care of that child, so wouldn't I be allowed to use that shofar for that child? So how does it doesn't make sense that we're making some sort of distinction. Well, it matters whether it's private or communal. It really shouldn't matter in its definition of whether it's a kli or not. So Visu, and furthermore, says the Gemara, had the tanya kishem shematatan shofar kach matatan sechatzotzos. And furthermore, says the Gemara, is that I'm going to show you now a third brisa, and the third brisa says that you're allowed to move on Shabbos both a shofar and a chatzotzos. So now your distinction is not going to help this third brisa. So now let's summarize before we get to the answer of the Gemara. We now have three complete brisas. One brisa says that on Shabbos you cannot move neither shofar nor chatzotzos. We have a second brisa that says that on Shabbos you can move shofar but not chatzotzos. And we have a third brisa that says that on Shabbos you can't move either. Okay? So the Gemara says...
You can move both, no?
Huh?
One says you can move both.
So one says you can move both. One says you can only move the shofar. One says you can move neither. So the Gemara says, Ela lo kashya. Ha Rabbi Yehuda, ha Rabbi Shimon, ha Rabbi Nechemya. So the Gemara says, now here we are. We are now going to give a three-pronged approach to explain. Meaning that there's really no explanation other than just simply, it's a machlokas. We have a debate amongst the Tanaim as to what degree Muxer is Usser on Shabbos. And going min hakal el hachamer. Now I know the Gemara says Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Nechemya, but I'll just shuffle them around just so that you can see them or hear them in order of degree of chomer. The easiest opinion, the lightest opinion, is Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon basically doesn't subscribe to Muxa. Now conceptually, he does have a Muxa. There are muksa categories according to Rabbi Shimon, but he is the most liberal in terms of the number of applications of muksa, limited. Then there is Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is in the middle. In other words, he has many categories of muksa, and then we have Rabbi Nechemya, who is the most machmir. So let's go over each one, and let's apply it to each brisa. Take a look at Rashi. Rashi here goes through each one. Ha Rav Yehuda, the top Rashi, second Rashi on the Amud, shofar metalta v'chatot zeh metaltalin, de muksahu, aval shofar toras kli alav kedamar la'el. So Rashi over here says that the brisa that strikes the difference between shofar and chatzotzos, that's Rav Yehuda. Because look, Rav Yehuda subscribes to the most, not the most. Right? He's the middle category. He basically subscribes to muksa, basically. He's the Beinoni, correct, in this discussion. And so therefore, chatzotzos, you can't move, period. Meaning chatzotzos is not a kli, it's not a utensil, it doesn't have any function other than producing sound, and so therefore, because it's not a kli, you can't move it at all on Shabbos. And then when it comes to the shofar, because the shofar is a kli, because I could use it to give drink to my child, so therefore it has Torah's kli alav, it is a kli, and for the purposes of Tzarech Mekom and Tzarech Gufo, I can move the shofar on Shabbos. That's all Rav Yehuda. Then the next Rashi, Hadik Tani Tarvayim Metalta Rabbi Shimon Idaleith Lemukta. And the Brisa that says, you can move a shofar, you can move Chatzot, that's Rabbi Shimon. Because Rabbi Shimon does not hold of Mukta. Again, conceptually he does, but practically speaking, very few examples of Mukta according to Rabbi Shimon, and the shofar and the Chatzot are not examples of Mukta. And finally, now we get introduced for the first time in the Masechta, I believe, to Rabbi Nechemiah. Rabbi Nechemiah is the most strict in terms of his definition of muktza. Let's take a look at Rashi inside. Rashi says, "Diktani af shofar e metaltel Rav Nechemia, de amar afilu tarvad afilu talis e notlin elat sarach tashmisho hamiyuchad." Rav Nechemia says the following: a spoon, imagine a spoon according to Rav Nechemia is muktza, right? Hmm. Meaning, I want to take a spoon out of the drawer. And I'd like to use it in order to, I don't know, hold down some papers. Or I would like to use the spoon on Shabbos in order so that the kids can play with it. Reb Nechemiah says, no. The only thing you could use the spoon for on Shabbos is for eating soup. That's it. Even kalim, which are primarily kalim that are mutter on Shabbos, can only be used for its primary purpose and for nothing else. And so therefore, according to Rabbi Nechemiah, now we're talking about shofar and chatzotzos. What's the primary purpose of shofar and chatzotzos? To produce sound. Now, you can't move either on Shabbos. Not the shofar, not the chatzotzos. Even though the shofar can be used to hold water, I don't care. Rabbi Nechemiah says, you look at what its primary purpose is. If its primary purpose is not melachto leheter, so then you cannot use it at all. And even if it was melachto leheter, according to Rabbi Nechemiah, I would only be allowed to use it for its primary purpose and for nothing else. Okay? And that is now the three brises and the approach of the three brises. Umay shofar, sorry, HaRab Nechemiah. Umay shofar namichat sorsos, kid Rav Chista, Rav Chista. Now, sorry, and okay, and when Rav Nechemiah speaks about the shofar, he's actually also referring to chatzotzos as well. Now I know that's a little bit confusing, but the Gemara explains. Kid Rav Chista, Ta'am Rav Chista hani klas mile ishtani shamayu michicharav beis hamikdash. Nomenclature. The Gemara now goes over a discussion of how certain things got a name change after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Chatzotzra shofra, meaning what once upon a time was referred to as the chatzotzros, is now referred to as the shofar, and shofra chatzotzra. And whatever was once upon a time called the shofar is now called the chatzotzros. So after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, the names of these two items got flipped. Lamai nafkamina. Now why is that important? The Gemara says, easy. The shofar shal Rosh Hashanah. Because on Rosh Hashanah we have to blow shofar. We're not allowed to blow chatzotzos, so therefore the names got flipped. Arava tzaf tzafa tzaf tzafa arava. When we get to the third parak of Sukkah, we're going to learn what the definition of the aravas are. Arava as opposed to tzaf tzafa, they are both willow-type branches, but they differ from one another. After the Chorban Beis HaMikdash, what was once called the arava is now called the tzaf tzafa, and was once called the tzaf tzafa is now called the arava. So lamai nafkamina lulav. So the Gemara says, obviously you need to know this, because when you go to the store and you want to purchase now what was once called the arava, now called the tzaf tzafa. Good. And pitura piturta, piturta pitura. Now these are various types of tables. Pitura is a large table. Piturta is a small table. Right? Those of you who speak Spanish or one of those languages, so you know that you can make things diminutive. You just add you do this in Farsi. You add a little, you add a little bit to the end of the word, a suffix to the end of the word, and it makes it into a smaller version of what it was. So the Gemara over here describes Petora Peturta. So Petora is a big table, and the Peturta is a smaller table. It's a diminutive. And then after the Chorban HaBayis, so it got switched. Peturta Petora. And so now what was once called the big table is now called the Peturta. And what was once called the small table is now called the Petora. And basically, I mean, I don't know if I fully understand what's going on in the Gemara right now, but the basic idea of the Gemara is that after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, the world got turned around. It got flipped. And so I guess it manifested itself in these items where the names of these items now get flipped, and it's just like the whole world just went topsy-turvy after Chorban HaBayis. And over here, the practical application is just simple commerce, meaning when I'm going to the store and I'm buying a paturta, now when I say the word paturta, what I'm expecting is a large table. And so what the seller should be selling me is a large table. And if he what comes out with is from the back is a small table, mekach tos. We did not have an agreement of what we just purchased. I'm going to add another thing to the list of things that got flipped around in terms of naming, and that's the second and third stomach of the animal. Right? The first stomach, we're talking about ruminating animals that have four stomachs. The first of the stomach is referred to as a keres. The last of the stomachs is called the keva. Okay, keva is that fourth stomach, that's part of the matnos kahuna, it's given to the kohen. What about stomachs 2 and 3? So stomachs 2 and 3, oh, the hovlila and the besakosos. Besakosos, if you take a look at the third stomach and you peel it from the inside out, you'll see that it has like it looks like little cups, one next to the other. And so therefore it's called the besakosos. So since the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, now the names of those stomachs have been flipped. So what was once the hovlila is now the besakosos, and what is... once the besakosos is now called the hovlila. L'maynaf kamina l'machashim says, but over besakosos. Demitzad echa ksheru mishnei tzadim trefa. If you find a needle lodged in the besakosos, so we know that if it only penetrated one side, it's fine, the animal's not a trefa. And only if it penetrates both sides, from one end to the other, the animal is the trefa. So now you have to know that we're talking about a needle in what was once called the besakosos, now called the hovlila. Amar Ravashi, we'll do one more of these. Af Anu Namar, Bavel, Borstif, Borstif, Bavel. Another thing that went through a name change is the town of Bavel and the town of Borstif. What was once Bavel is now Borstif, and what's once Borstif is now Bavel. And the Mayan of Kaman, the Gemara wants to know, and what's the practical application? What's the difference? Flagite Nashim. So that would affect get the delivering of the get. Rashi over here offers two explanations of what the Gemara means. The first explanation of Rashi, top Rashi on the Amud, legite nashim de kaimalan b'nei bavo b'kim shetzarech lichtov get lishma v'hamevi get misham ein tzarech lomer b'fanenechtam. The first discussion in Masech Gittin is that when a get is delivered from out of Eretz Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael, so you have to say the magic words of b'fanenechta b'fanenechtam. If the get was written in front of me, and it was signed in front of me. And the Gemara there has a discussion, the first three, four, five blot of the Masechta. Why should that be? The Gemara advances two explanations of why that should be. But in other words, the exception is given to the people living in Bavel. If you write a get in Bavel and deliver to Eretz Yisrael, you don't have to say b'fanenechta b'fanenechta. And there's more explanation that can be given, but right now that'll be sufficient. And so you need to now know that Bavel is no longer Bavel. Bavel now is Borstif. And Borstif is now Bavel, so that this exemption of Befanenechtam, Befanenechtam, is not for the people of Bavel, it's now for the people of Borstif. That is Rashi's first explanation of the Gemara. Rashi gives now a second explanation of the Gemara. Ve'ani omer nafka mina, I'm in the end of Rashi. Ve'ani omer nafka mina, l'gitei nashim le'inyan shina shmo. U'shma v'shem iro v'ira, pasol, v'tzarech lichtov shem shel achshav. Let's say you live in a city that was formerly known as whatever. In other words, it had a different name to it. And now when you're writing the get, the requirement is to write the name of the city that you're in the get. And, explains Rashi, it's now important to know that even though this city was formerly known as Bavel, but now it's Borsif, you have to write the current name of the city, not what it was formerly known as. Rashi says that's the nafkamina, another possible nafkamina of Borsif versus Bavel. Hadron Alach Bameh Madlikin, and that is the end of the second parak of Shabbos. General speaking, Rabbi Yehuda, we're in the middle. Okay, and now we start the third parak of Shabbos. Okay, and with words of introduction, we want food on Shabbos. In fact, not only do we want food on Shabbos, it's a mitzvah. We demand food. It's a mitzvah to have food on Shabbos. Part of the mitzvah of Shabbos is Onik Shabbos. It's enjoying Shabbos, and there's no better way to enjoy Shabbos than with food. And not just food, but hot food. Right? You want the food to be cooked and hot. The And so here's the issue. Meaning the way to get the food hot is to obviously cook it before Shabbos and to keep it on the flame going into Shabbos. Now, as we already discussed earlier, in of itself, that's fine. We had a machlokas back in the first parak of Shabbos between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Can your kelim do malacha on Shabbos? And Beis Hillel says, yes, they can. And that's obviously how we hold. So the fact that your food is cooking over the course of Shabbos, that in of itself is fine. But here, the problem lies in the following. It's food, and we are Jews. And it's not always... It's not always the healthiest relationship. And so what ends up happening is on a Friday evening, you're looking at the food. Is it done? Is it ready? I'm not sure. And so what you may do now is seeing that the food may not be fully cooked. And here you are now having guests come over. So you're going to be tempted on Shabbos to turn up the oven a little bit. Now, I speak in modern day terms, but back then, same story. In other words, you take the coals and you start stoking around the coals. And so, this is basically the concern of the Chachamim. What do we do to prevent people from tampering with the pot of food that's going up before Shabbos? We want to make sure that people don't tamper. So, because once you tamper, so now you're in violation of the malacha. Now the malacha may be bishul, it may be cooking, it may be just simply havara, right, creating more fire. Okay, I'll show you a Rashi, I'll show you a Tosus later on, over the course of the beginning of the parak, in terms of what the concern may actually be. But that's the basic idea of this third parak of Shabbos. What did the Chachamim impose in order to make sure that we would not touch the pot? Okay. Furthermore, we're also going to introduce two basic concepts. One is Shehiyah. What is Shehiyah? What I just described. Meaning the idea of Shehiyah is putting food on the fire before Shabbos and letting it sit there over the course of Shabbos. The word Shehiyah just simply means to wait, right?
To pause.
And then there's another concept which is called Chazara. Now Chazara means the following. On Shabbos itself, the food is fully cooked. What I'd like to do is I'd like to take the pot off the fire in order to help myself to some of the food and then put the pot back on the fire again. And that's what's called chazara. And under certain circumstances and assuming certain conditions, you can do that on Shabbos as well. But again, the Chachamim were concerned. What the concern of chazara is not necessarily the same concern as Shehiyah. Again, we'll talk more about that as we go through the perek. And then there's Hatmana, which we already discussed once before, which is also going to make some appearances here in the third parak. But the real discussion of Hatmana comes in the fourth parak of Shabbos, where the first Mishnah starts off with Bamet Tomnin uva Ein Tomnin. That's where Hatmana is discussed. But right now we're discussing cooking on Shabbos. Now, another word of introduction. We're going to be talking about an oven back in the time of the Gemara. It's called the Kira. Kira is a really simple apparatus. Okay? Not like our fancy ovens. A Kira is a box. Now, it's not a cardboard box, obviously. That wouldn't make a good oven. But it was basically made out of earthenware. But it was a square shape. Perhaps even rectangular. And what you would do in this Kira is that you would take the coals and you would put it in the bottom of this. And then you would take a pot of food. And you would sometimes, as per the whatever the recipe tells you, you would take the pot of food and perhaps put it in the box, in the Kira. Perhaps you would put some sort of grate on the top and you put it on the top of the Kira, kind of like what we do with a stove. Okay, so in other words, but this is the basic apparatus that was used back then. It was called the Kira. There are other apparatuses that were used back then. There was something called the Tanur. I know in modern Hebrew, a Tanur is an oven, but they had the Tanur back then. And they had another apparatus, which is called a Kupach. Okay, but I'm ahead of ourselves right now. That's coming up later in the parak. Let's start. Let's begin the Mishnah, the first Mishnah of the third parak of Shabbos, Kira. So here we describe the Kira. It's the oven, the rectangular oven that I just described. Shehi sikua b'kash u'vigvava. Now let's say the fuel that we used is either kash u'gvava. Now this is basically stalks. It's hay. For those of you who remember your Boy Scout days, so you remember that they light really well. But they light really, they right, but they don't last. Okay, they light, they go out, and that's it. The party's over. And so when you're lighting with kashuk vava, if you're using that as fuel, you really, there's no concern of tampering. Meaning, because what's going to happen? They're going to light, they're going to extinguish, and that's it. And you, by you playing around with it, it's not going to help. They're out. It's done. It's not like a wood coal, where the wood coal, it gets hot, it stays hot, and if you play around with it, the heat could actually, you can actually increase the heat. So when you're laying with Kashuk Vava, so you're not really worried about tampering, so the Mishnah says, no snala, tafshil. You could put food right on top of it. It's fine. Now, the Mishnah is not particularly clear. Are we talking about before Shabbos? Are we talking about on Shabbos? Please stay tuned, because that's going to be a big discussion in the Gemara. Begefes uve eitzim. However, if the fuel that you're using is either gefes or eitzim, now they are excellent fuels. Eitzim is wood. Basically, it's charcoal. It's coal. What is gefes? Gefes is after they press the olives, so you're left with schmutz. I don't know. There's a better word for it. Huh?
Residual.
You're left with the residual olive. Now, what the oil, obviously, you've taken now for yourself, but those residual olives make for great fuel. You lay that down on the bottom, you light it, and it makes for great fuel. By the way, just a fun fact, which I learned over the past Yontif, you know what makes great fuel? Potato chips.
Oh, yeah, it's all oil.
I went, on Yontif, I visited my neighbor, Rabbi Flug, and he's such a smart guy. But in other words, but what he did on Yontif is he barbecued using potato chips.
Really?
His children were not happy with
that. Huh? That's exactly the point, meaning you have no problems of having to worry about putting it out, meaning it lights and then extinguishes.
Long enough to make any cooking.
It's a fun fact. What can I tell you? Yeah? Okay.
It's very expensive fuel.
Yeah, okay. Just for Yontif. Okay, so the Begefes of Eitzim Lo Yitein Ad Sheyigrof Ad Sheyitein Es Eifer. So, if you're using either Gefes or Eitzim, so you can't put food on top of this Kira or in this Kira until either you sweep the coals, that's Gerufa, or Ad Sheyitein Es Eifer, or if you lay down ash over the top of the coals. In other words, the Chachamim demanded that before we put anything into this oven, in order to prevent us from playing around with the fire, so there are one of two ways to solve this issue. Either sweeping it. Now, what exactly that means, sweeping? Meaning, are we talking about sweeping it out totally? Sweeping it to the side? Okay, subject to a debate. Perhaps tomorrow we'll discuss more of that. Or, Ad Sheyitein Es Eifer. Putting a layer of ash over the top of it. What exactly that accomplishes, I'll speak more about tomorrow. Now, what food can you put on top of this? So Beit Shammai says just water, but not food. And Beit Hillel says water and food. Now Beit Shammai says that you can take the food off, but you can't put the food on. That's nolin avalo machzirin, meaning, let's put it in terms that we now are accustomed to. You could do shihiya, but you can't do chazara. Beisil omri maf machzirin, and Beisil says, no, you could do shihiya, and you could do chazara. Again, shihiya is before Shabbos, chazara is on Shabbos. Okay, we just got introduced to the third perek of Shabbos. Tomorrow we start with the Gemara's discussion. We are going to, this is obviously going to touch on a lot of practical halacha vis-a-vis how we set up our food going into Shabbos. So please come back. Rabbi Chanan Yemen HaKashem HaRatzakash Baruch Huzak Yisrael Ficha Achir Bam Torah Mitzvah Shanem HaNechafetz Amantzikol Yagdil Torah V'Yadir.